Hey, what's going on? And welcome back to the Rockman Power Hour, a podcast where we talk to the most interesting people in the world of pop culture, music, and everything in between. I am joined by my co-host, Ryan Stick. Ryan, I love that jacket you're wearing. It's foreshadowing to what might be coming in the future.
Yes, foreshadowing. Why did I do that?
I don't know.
Foreshadowing.
I don't know, man. I'm not a dad, but I got dad energy, dad jokes, dad stuff, dad bod. It's dad up the wazoo.
So you and I haven't gotten to see each other for a bit, but I came back from Ottawa. I was in Ottawa for a week shooting my first movie ever.
Oh,
and
that's something, man. I've been in movie scenes,
but how many movies have you been in?
A few. I've been in a lot of miniseries and a lot of TV shows, but I think only actual movies you could have saw in a theater. One.
The last one.
To Catch a Killer, which, you know, when your movie comes out and my dinky little scene, we should kind of do a little commentary about the stuff and like what was the goings on, because I'm sure you got some amazing stories about that. And
it was a crazy fun experience. I had a great great cast and a great crew, and they welcomed me with open arms. They knew I didn't have much experience in that world. You know, I've done theater, but I've never done film. I've done, TV shows. I've done little things here and there, but I don't call myself an actor.
I don't call myself an actor, despite the fact I pay for union fees. So,
right. But you've been paid to act, which is cool.
Yes, I have.
I've been paid to do some commercial kind of stuff, but not like, you know, no. If I have a project, it's usually something that I have conceptualized, because I can't rely on anyone else to give me a job. So I'd have to come up with my own ideas. You know what that's like. It's like having, you know, season zero, or when we did Rock and Power Hour, but like the skit version,
yeah,
all that stuff. So it's, I think, to be asked to be in someone else's movie was fun.
Yeah.
And to act with a bunch of people that really take it seriously, that are, you know, like some of the people that were in the cast were like, I was there for 6 days, and during the day they would be like, oh shit, I've got an audition, I've got to go do this really quick. And they would go in the other room, they'd set up the thing, and they would do like, and then another person was like, yeah, I have to record like 6 voice auditions today, because my agent sent me a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, holy shit, these guys are working. And here I am, like, you know.
Good on their agents, though, for getting like that much work and stuff.
Yeah.
Or even that many opportunities. That's very cool.
So it was fun. And I got, I don't want to give anything away, but it's going to be really cool. It's a movie's called Slasher Film. So.
Oh, that's great, man. That's the dream. But also at the same time, I'm like, it's kind of cool that they just kind of asked, like, did you have to audition for this? Or did they say, he's got this? Dude, that's the fucking dream. I didn't really have to audition to be Buddy Holly in a play, because my friend, our friend Ben, rest in peace, Ben. Mm-hmm. He just knew I could play guitar and knew I could play Buddy Holly. And I was so jaded by the acting thing at that point where I'm like, I'm not good enough to play waiter number 2. Why do you think I can be the lead in your play? And sometimes when people just give you that opportunity, you will surprise yourself. So all the Ben Kalmans and your friends that cast you in this movie, I mean, even if they weren't your friends, I think they'd cast you in this movie, man, because you got that it factor. Scary, I've been to prison, I can kill you type of look if you wanted to, or you could be a soft emotional care bear, whichever one. Or you could be a soft emotional care bear in prison and really wow them.
Oh man, my chair is falling. It's like, what's going on over here? It's okay.
I think it's because I'm flattering you.
Falling off my chair. It was, listen, dude, it was an experience. It was a fun experience. I'm really grateful that I got to do it. So thanks to Kevin Priest and to everyone who invited me on that thing to be a part of it. It was really, really fun. And I don't want to give anything away, but I got to do some cool shit. So I'm happy. And I sent you some videos and pictures. So, it's stuff I've always wanted to get to do. So
it was cool. It will not be your last one, man.
Because I mean, already some of the guys there were like, hey man, I'm doing a short, do you want to be in it? And I'm like, yes, I can do anything at this point. But so we haven't seen each other in a while. So it's nice to see you. We're going to be joined today by a young man who is really, really on the up and up when it comes to his band. I think his band is really, really cool. We have a lot of bands on this show, Yes. And we don't shy away from giving support to up and coming bands, but I like this band a lot. They're called Dead Poets Society. And we got a chance to chat with Jack Underkoffler, who is the lead singer and vocalist of the band. They're out of Boston, have been around ever since 2013, signed a deal to Universal Music Publishing in 2018, released their debut album in 2021. And they're just really, really cool. And they put out a new album called Fishian. Okay, now I know he corrects me in the interview the proper pronunciation, but I think it's called Fishian.
So people will have to stick around and wait until see how to probably pronounce Fishian.
It's but listen, man, they're a very, very cool band. All the bands met while they were attending Berklee College of Music. So that tells you that they're some real musicians. And they're great, man. Their choruses are awesome. I just think they're just a great band that knows how to write songs. And I'm, as you know, I talk about it all the time. I'm a big fan of that. When someone hones their craft and they're able to get stuff done.
I love songwriting. I love good songwriting. Sometimes when I hear a band and everyone's good and there's the bass player, he's going nuts and the guitar player's going nuts, but there's nothing to cling to.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, it's just four dickwads showing off at this point. Like, you got to have a little thing. And Dream Theater, although they're extremely proficient musicians, they got songs, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Songs are important. You know what else is important? Heartbeat Hot Sauce. And they are literally the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. Check them out over at heartbeathotsauce.com. I am holding up the Dark Side of the Grill. This is the Shiitake Szechuan hot sauce. And if you use our promo code Rockman20, right below there, that will give you 20% off your entire order. So use it as many times as you like. And thank you to Heartbeat Hot Sauce. I love this stuff. Very quickly, when I was on that video shoot, when that movie shoot, I tried a hot sauce that was there.
Yeah.
That was not Heartbeat Hot Sauce. I doused it by mistake.
Okay.
I ate it. And immediately, I was in so much pain. Ryan, the worst kind of pain I've ever been in. I'm not kidding, man. I had to douse myself. You know, I had to drink a ton of milk. I had to drink water. I had to eat bread, white bread with butter, like anything I could do just to coat it. And all day it went, I just felt it moving. And then of course, you know what happens the next day.
Yeah. Like the movie, there's going to be an opening and it's going to come out.
It was a burn that I don't ever want to feel again.
Speaking of burn, what about that salt burn shirt?
Oh yeah. Thanks. Yeah. All right. Anyways, thank you to Heartbeat Hot Sauce. And thank you for not doing that to I messaged Al from Heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I said, dude, have you ever heard of this hot sauce? Yeah. I don't even want to give the hot sauce the time of day. I'm not even going to give it a name. I'm not even going to, but I showed him the bottle and he's like, oh dude, he goes, we've had that at some competitions. He goes,
yeah,
that's one that usually makes people cry.
Oh,
he goes, I've seen people cry because of that. They've had that. And I said, how much do they have? They go, like a pin drop.
Oh, wow. And you dosed it.
Ryan, I made a big mistake. Okay. A big mistake. And a few other people on the set did the same thing. And they were, it was one of the worst experiences I've had with food in my life.
When I joined this band called The Real Deal, I kind of wanted to be part of the boys and wanted to impress them. So they had this hot sauce from New Orleans called Ultra Death or Megadeth, one of the ones where it's all dialed up. And I just poured it all on like a Delicio pizza. And bro, I was in pain for hours, but I wouldn't show it. And eventually I was just like, I something's wrong. Nothing is helping. I'm dying. Help me.
Well, Julia was saying that this is something that could actually, you know, cause an ulcer or cause you like, it was awful. It was awful. It was horrible, horrible. And never again will I try a hot sauce without dipping my pinky in it and trying a pinhead of it because it was disgusting.
Good for you, man. Sometimes I just go in and just suffer the results and just live with them.
Yeah.
Kind of like someone that doesn't pay attention. I know you're in a horror movie, but I'm like that teenager that's going to go have sex in the woods, despite the fact that, like, you know, all the teens died 100 years ago tonight. And it says, beware. And I'm like, let's get it on. So
anyway, speaking of burns, like you said, Saltburn shirt, you like it?
Oh yeah. And I like that movie too. Very cool. Give me Talented Mr. Ripley vibes. It was very cool.
totally talented. It's very much talented Mr. Ripley vibes. You're right. So thank you to our friends over at Studio House Designs. Check them out at studiohousedesigns.com. Wonderful shirts that will keep you looking fresh every day.
Yeah.
And you got 13 ghosts. Ooh, good one.
This is one of the first ones I got from them, actually. This was like, I was so excited to explore their back catalog. So that's important to go on studiohousedesigns.com and just look for their old stuff. You don't even need the new stuff. It's good to get the new stuff, but they do have old stuff. So, you know, best of both worlds. And make sure that all you Canadians out there, make sure that package is worth buying. Like, buy a lot of stuff. You know, if you're gonna get across the border, like, go nuts like me, because you know, you won't regret it.
Definitely. All right, man. Well, look, we're going to step into this interview right now. We got a chance to chat with lead singer and guitar player from the band Dead Poets Society. This is none other than Jack Underkoffler. Hey, man, how are you?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. Where are you? Where are we chatting from? Where are you?
I'm in Huntington Beach, California right now.
You're definitely somewhere that's a lot sunnier than I am right now.
Where are you?
Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Probably pretty cold.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking cold. So thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You were asking me about my room, so if there's anything you want to know about, just let me know. Like, that's the T-1000.
Trying to see what I have. Okay, T-1000 there. What else you got?
Well, behind me is a lot of art toys. Like, I'm really into Ron English and...
Okay. Yeah. I see a little Star Wars action going on the top shelf.
Yeah. That's Ron English's take on that. There's some bear bricks.
Oh, so it's a specific artist that makes those.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, he's like a pop culture artist. He does paintings. He does all kinds of crazy shit. So
that's cool.
Yeah. It's where they put me. The rest of the house just goes, you go in there, play with your fun stuff and let us have the rest of the house.
Oh, that's the dopest room in the house, dude.
Right. So, all right. So tell me a bit about this band, because I listened to the music and I was very pleasantly surprised by how not only well executed the music was, but how melodic everything was. I thought, it seems like you guys, when it comes to writing choruses and writing hooks and writing well-structured songs, you're swinging for the fences. Is that important to you guys as a whole, as a unit? Because, you know, some bands, you can tell they get together and like, well, we're going to just try to get something across, but it's going to be maybe how we feel. It's going to be maybe an attitude, but you guys seem to have a little bit of that. And at the same time, it's really important that we have well-structured songs that are well put together.
Yeah. You've nailed a lot of it. I think that, Jack and I, guitarist Jack and I have a, very strong background in like a lot of our influences were, you know, not necessarily hard rock.
Right.
And, you know, I think that comes through quite a bit, because I mean, it's just, you know, having a melody is so driving. It's so capturing, you know. And I think that everybody in the band has such a musical background too, from just growing up as instrumentalists, that we, you know, that has to play a role for us. And those two things can kind of be at odds with each other sometimes, because, you know, the more you structure the music, the more you have to focus on kind of like creating the melody as counterpoint almost. There's not as much of a bed to work with. So it forces you to get a little bit more creative.
Right.
And that kind of push and pull, I think, is what kind of lets us write the way we do.
You said some of your influences were hard rock. Like, what kind of stuff did you grow up listening to? What kind of stuff kind of was in the back of your mind when you were writing, or when you started writing, I should say?
For me personally, like, what my parents introduced me to was a lot of like Chet Baker and Frank Sinatra and Bob Dylan.
Okay.
There's a lot of that kind of stuff. And then as I started to get a little older and, you know, feeling a little bit more rebellious and stuff, I remember my sister picked up American Idiot when it first came out, and she was like playing it at the house, and I was allowed to listen to it with her, but I wasn't allowed to like use the CD at all, you know, like,
yeah.
So I'd go and sit in her room and we would like listen to it. And oh my God, it was like this, like, I had never experienced anything like that.
It's like a light switch goes on, right?
Right. Right. Exactly. And, And then shortly after that, I found a band called Alter Bridge.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm sure you know them.
Of course.
Yep. And then I remember hearing that song, Find the Real, and it was just like the heaviest thing I'd ever heard. And I was like, holy shit, dude.
Yeah, dude. And Miles Kennedy, who, you know, when it comes to vocals and comes to melodies, I mean, there's a reason why Slash pegged him to be the lead singer in his band. I mean, the guy can write a hook like nobody.
That's very true. A lot of the way I sing today is in big part because of him.
Yeah.
Because he was just, he could hit such like high notes, but he wouldn't do it like with like, you know, it was like clean. Never heard a vocalist sing so cleanly before over something so heavy.
Yeah. And props to Tremonti too. Cause I mean, he does write a lot of that stuff. I mean, those guys.
Right.
And it's funny because they're one of those bands. Again, you could tell that the importance on song structure was there. Creed were one of those bands too. Like, you might want to make fun of them. You might say, oh, they're this, they're that, but they deliver. And there's a reason why people sing their songs for decades.
Yeah, dude. I think people are finally getting tired of pretending that they don't like Creed.
We go for it here in our own country with Nickelback. You know, Nickelback were one of the most hated Canadian bands, but Chad can write a song, and there's a reason why he fills up arenas across the world, you know?
Yep. I was just actually talking about that last night with the label manager of mine.
Okay.
On our label. Yeah. We were talking about Nickelback, and I guess he played a part in their success. And he said when he first heard them, he was like, I like commercial music as much as I love niche, really avant-garde music. And he said when he heard Nickelback for the first time, he was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, they do suffer from, you know, if you're someone who is anti-radio and you don't like, you know, you don't like stuff that's well-structured and hits, you might not like it, but there's no denying their success, and there's no denying like when they play live. I don't know anyone that's gone to see Nickelback live that has not left and said, you know what? I'd go see them again. I don't know anyone, because they're really good. No matter who you are,
okay.
you got to go see them live. Cause it happened to me. I went and I was like, I don't want to see Nickelback. Walked out of there going, I'll go see them any day of the week. Because they deliver.
Okay.
But they're also taking a lot of stuff. They're taking a lot of stuff from the Pantera handbook and the Metallica handbook. And that's okay. Cause we get influenced by
things. But everybody does. That's the evolution
everybody
of music.
100%.
Yeah.
And when you say stuff like, you know, Chet Baker and Frank Sinatra and Green Day, it makes sense because those are all artists that knew how to structure things really well with whatever lane they were in. You know, there was no Mickey Mouse about it. It was straight ahead for what they were doing. And it was instantly palatable, whether you call it pop, whether you call it commercial, doesn't matter. So when I put on, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Fission.
Like a fission bomb or like
fission.
A fission reactor.
Fission. All right. That's what I thought it was. So
yeah.
when I put on Fission, and I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy from Sarah, I was just like, man, this is really fucking good. And
thanks, man.
Yeah. And it's really refreshing to see younger bands that are taking the time to craft good songs and to come correct when it comes to, because it's a really competitive world out there, as you know, especially for musicians. Mm-hmm. And you got to really, really have something special. So everything I've heard about this band is not only are the songs good, but live this band delivers too. So do you guys kind of feel like you have a bit of an underbubble that's happening where people are starting to hear about you? There's a bit of a pop that's going on and things are starting to fire on. Yeah. I can see your smile. So it's gotta be a good feeling when you feel like, man, people are finally starting to catch on to this.
It is a good feeling. Cause you're plugging away for so long. You kind of forget that's eventually supposed to happen if you're doing it right, you know? And like, so you're just kind of caught in this whirlwind of day to day, just trying to make it. But then you forget like that those things are supposed to happen. So when they finally do, you're like, oh shit. You know,
somebody's
actually paying attention now. I didn't expect that to ever actually happen, even though I was doing all these things to try to make it happen, you know?
There's been some really, really, high points for you guys at radio as well. That's gotta be a good feeling too, when you go into a market and we're going to get to the touring part. Cause I'm looking at your itinerary coming up and I'm tired just looking at it. I mean, you guys are fucking on the road a lot, man. Like, and you're like, not just, you know, not just North America, you're playing Europe, you're playing everywhere. But when you start to get that radio success and you go into a market, let's say you go into a place like Madison, Wisconsin, and the station's playing you, and all of a sudden it's a market you might've toured before, but there's a different thing that's happening because people are actually knowing the words to the song. That's got to be really cool.
Yeah.
Because radio support really does make that difference.
It does. It 100% does. And, just seeing that from place to place, it's just mind boggling. There's no two ways about it. It's just kind of like, whoa, like still blows my mind.
Do you guys have, was there a certain station that picked up on you guys first where everybody kind of remembers the one station that was there at the beginning that was, mm-hmm. Maybe somewhere far off, but there was just this one place where it just started popping. What was the station for you guys?
I think early supporters were like Matt Pinfield. Oh, man. Who else? There are quite a few at the same time.
Right.
Matt Pinfield, I know, just sticks out in my head because, he came and met us at the show that we played opening for Bad Flower one time. And he's just an awesome dude about it. And
he really is.
Really supports us, like really fully backs us. So it's cool.
And then, when you have these people in your corner, a guy like Matt, Matt's so seasoned, so respected, and knows his shit, man. He's like, he's mm-hmm. that, a lot of people are watching that show Loudermilk now, on Netflix. I don't know if you heard about it.
But no, I haven't.
It's basically about an old music critic who becomes, he's sober and he becomes a guy who leads a lot of 12-step meetings and stuff. But he was probably like a writer for Rolling Stone. They don't say what publication, but he was probably like a Rolling Stone writer in the 90s. And it's very opinionated about music. And if you have a shitty music collection, I don't want to be your friend. But there's these guys that they've been around. And when they like you, it's almost like a badge of honor. And when a guy like Matt Pinfield's in your corner, that's a great, great feeling. Because Matt's been there. He was at the ground floor for so many things, especially for grunge. I mean, not very many people have Nevermind plaques. He does.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a nice feeling, man.
It is really good. It's a little drop validation. You get those every once in a while where you're like, okay, maybe I am on the right track,
Yeah, no, definitely. The process of putting this record together, were you guys able to be in a room together or were you still at a point where you were distanced?
We tend to write together all the time. Okay. I mean, even through COVID, none of us fucking go out. So it's just, we knew that nobody was hanging out with anybody else. Cause like, who are they going to hang out with?
Right.
So we'd all just write together still. We'd go to the rehearsal space.
Do you live fairly close to each other?
Yeah, we do. We all live like 30 minutes away from each other at the most.
So that's great. So you're fortunate that you're able to get it together even in the recording process. Same thing.
Yep. Recording process. Same thing. COVID was pretty much on its way out when we really started hitting the recording. And so that wasn't a much of an issue anymore. We didn't really care. And so, so that wasn't a big deal. It was initially at first we were like, do we write together? Do we do it over Zoom? We tried, I think maybe to write over Zoom. I can't really remember, but then we were just like, no, fuck it. Like, who are you hanging out with? No one. Go to the rehearsal space. So we kept writing. And yeah, it was weird that, for something so life-stopping for everybody, it somehow timed it in a way that was just at this like perfect arc of being able to just continue without it truly affecting our career in a hugely negative way.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Did you at any point in the recording process look at the other band members and go, man, I really think we've got something good on our hands?
Yeah, but also then that light switch is in 3 minutes to, I don't think we can do that. I don't think we're good at this, I think we should just stop playing music.
Right.
It's a lot of bipolarity mm-hmm. yeah. in that kind of process where you're just like, you only have the four of you. And so granted, this is the way you should do it. And the only way that there truly is to do it, because you're expressing yourself. And if you're not expressing yourself, why are you making art? But you don't know if you just have these constant inner monologues going of like, is this good? Is this shit? Is this good? Is this shit? You don't know, because it just gets bogged down by so much thinking. And so like, you just have to trust your initial reaction that when you wrote that part, it made you go, fuck yeah, that's sick. And you just got to remember that. And so you're like, okay, this is good. This is good. And then once it's all mixed and mastered and you have no say in the matter anymore, then I feel like you can really sit back and be like, this is good.
Right. And it's scary too, because you know, the more success you have, the more people that have their fingers in the pie, they want to have opinions. Were you guys, you know, you have producers, labels, friends, you know, significant others that might listen to it and go, you know, I played this for my girlfriend last night. She doesn't know if the part's good. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, there's just so many people like, that want to have an opinion.
I have an interesting, that sort of thought process. Our label has been so hands-off from the beginning because of how, like, everybody in this band is so opinionated. So there's not a single person on earth that will have a stronger opinion than the four of us in this band. And so I think most people, when they start working with us, get that sense really quickly.
They trust it.
They're going to be like, okay, yeah, no, you guys do what you want. You know, like, because we'll let people know when something sucks and when we don't want to hear their opinion.
Right.
And I think we're very protective over our music writing because of the vibe that we all, for some reason, strive for. We all feel this very particular vibe when we're writing.
Right.
And we seek that vibe out constantly because it's never gotten old to us. And that vibe just ends up being Dead Poets Society. The only way place where it does get difficult to not let opinions and thoughts in is the fact that we actually have fans now, you know, before that we had, you know, some fans, a few fans in Mexico, a few fans in the States and like here and there, but you know, we didn't have a lot of people listening to our music. And so it kind of felt like, well, nobody's watching. So who gives a shit what we put out, you know, like let's put out whatever the fuck we want.
Right.
And then when people are listening, you get a little freaked out because you're like, people are listening. So I think it was like a real like challenge and objective of ours for this record to be like, remind yourself every day you're writing music because you love to do it and you got to write like no one's listening. Yeah. No one matters. This is your expression. Do that. Fuck everything else.
Right. And I think I really do believe that is the best way, because when you start chasing results, you're not going to get the pure stuff that you get when you're actually in there with the right intentions. But this comes back to what I was saying to you at the beginning. There is a sense that this band takes this seriously. And I think anyone who gets involved with you probably says, well, fuck, there's a reason why we handpicked these guys. There's a reason why we put them on our roster. Let's just let them do what they want. And if more labels had that approach, I think you'd see a lot of bands having a better time of it. But it's like, it's the same in the cinema world. You know, you can tell when a movie's done by someone who has really strong creative opinions and doesn't let, you know, a guy like James Gunn, when James Gunn does a project and he's left alone, it's great. But as soon as somebody else starts to get their finger in it, you know, starts to go in there and try to change things, you got to let artists be artists.
Right. Yeah. I think it was, Rick Rubin had a little bit on that where he was saying, you can tell, it's like exactly what you're saying. It's like, you can tell when a movie was made with the thought process of what do you think people will like, rather than I want to create.
I want to tell a story. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what happened. This, unfortunately, it's happened to the back end of the Marvel movies, but it's okay because we, the front end.
Oh my God, dude.
It was very heavy. It was
Miss Marvel or what was it? The Marvels? Holy God, that was horrible.
It was heavily front loaded. So we got a good 10 years out of them. So now there's a bit of retooling to do, but tell me a bit about the road, because you guys are, from what I'm seeing, the first dates, early February. And when I'm looking at tour dates, you guys are on the road. Like, I know there's probably some breaks here and there, but you've got dates like right up until the end of the year. For Jack himself, when he sees that, is that something that goes, fuck yeah, I'm busy? Or is there a part of you that, like, do you leave behind loved ones that you're going to miss? Or are you just like, no, I'm going and this is what I want to do? Because for a lot of people, that can be very, very anxiety inducing when they see a huge, huge itinerary in front of them.
I think it's a pretty gung-ho kind of attitude.
Yeah.
Once you get in it. Yeah. Leading up to it, we just had our album release show last night in LA, and I've had a rock in my stomach for the past 2 weeks just thinking about it coming up. And because we had 3 months off. And when you take that much time off, this like sense of like, do I even like playing shows? Why am I doing this to myself? This like anxiety starts to set in. And then you get that first show out of the way and you're just like, oh yeah, this is the best fucking thing on earth. I forgot about that.
Right.
And so now that that first show's out of the way, you know, we've identified all the kinks in the show, got to, you know, jump around on stage and do all that. And then you reminds you of how familiar that environment is to you. I'm nothing but excited for this tour.
Yeah. Nice. Are there some spots that you're hitting for the first time, or is a lot of these repeats?
A lot of new places. I would say about a third of the tour is new places. So we're going to Spain, Sweden, Budapest, Portugal. Haven't played a lot of these places before.
That's amazing. So, you know, and this is the greatest thing, you know, being someone who played music for a long time and toured, it's the most beautiful thing about being in a band is that you get to travel. And it's almost like you're going and you're having a taster's plate. You know, you're trying a little bit from here, and you can file in the Rolodex mental one and say, man, I really like Budapest. You know, I'm going to come back there. And you get to make friends in these places. So when you go back, if you want to go back, you know, leisurely, you've got friends, you've got a system there already. There's something about being a musician. When you tour and when you make friends around the world, you get to see things so much different than the average traveler.
Right.
I mean, there's the other side of it where you're there for 8 hours and you can't see anything, but you might just see enough to go, wow, I want to come back here and spend a week here.
Right.
Has that happened to you yet when you've traveled, where you've gone back somewhere as, you know, either vacationed or to visit because you loved it so much the first time you went?
The list is building. I haven't really had a chance to do that yet. I think it's more like when we tour back through here, I'm going to make sure I set time aside so I can really experience this place. I think that's what it's more like. It's like when you're on the road, if you don't make a concerted effort to make time to go see certain things, it is so easy to just sit in the hotel room or sit in the van or sit in the green room and just do jack shit.
Right.
And so you really have to kind of like force yourself to be like, how many times am I going to be in Prague? Like, I got to go see this. And
Where is the sweet spot for you when it comes to visiting something? Is it like, are you nerdy? Are you like in terms of pop culture, what's the thing that you want to do when you go somewhere? Like, do you want to go to the record store? Do you want to go to the comic book store? Do you want to hit, I don't know, is there a certain gym you want to go to because you do these crazy workouts you heard about? Like, is there something that you look for in each place that you go?
I think what I aim for is like any sort of like grand like display, whether that's historic or natural,
right?
Like any sort of view, skyline, you know, mountain or volcano, or
you want to see it.
I just want to see that. That's amazing. And then if there's something like some sort of historical structure, like a massive cathedral,
So are you into history? Are you into art? Are you into all that stuff? Like, will you research a place before you go?
I would say I'm decently into history. I'm not a huge history buff, but I'm decently into it. I think that a big part of my interests tend to be, I like to know a lot of stuff about, I like to know a little bit of stuff about a lot of different things.
Okay.
So that's kind of like my sort of, I don't like to dive super deep. So I know a lot of stuff about a lot of different things. A little bit of stuff about a lot of different things, but you start to ask me questions about it, it just falls right apart. So that's kind of like my jam.
So, let me see. Who's that?
Oh yeah. That's Sander.
Hey,
he's
buddy.
The happy one.
He's like,
what up, buddy?
What's up, dude? Like,
what the heck, dude?
But you know, like for me, when I would be on the road, I always like to hit record stores because I collect records. So, I would be able to, you know, and that's the fun thing. If you are a collector in any way, when you go to different cities, you can find shit everywhere that you would never find. I mean, now it's a little bit different because it's so open with eBay and stuff, but it is fun to be in the wild looking for something. Do you collect anything at all?
No, I don't. Well, I collect tour passes. I lied. I didn't think I collected anything, but I collect tour passes.
Do you have a lot of them?
To me, it's just starting to be a lot. which I think is so sick. It's just such a surefire way to just like snap you back into, oh shit, I remember that, you know? Yeah.
And if you're ever a guest, like let's say you go to a Judas Priest show and you get an after show, you know, like a sticky, or if you get a laminate, like is that the kind of thing you like to keep too? So you can go like, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the best. I mean, listen, I have tons of passes, you know, and I put most of mine away, but like, you know, it's really, really nice when you have those, because they're total memories. They're like little snapshots.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like a little label for a filing cabinet in your brain.
Yeah.
And when exactly. you pick it up, you open that filing cabinet. Yeah. Right.
And you're like, oh yeah, I remember that. So the album comes out, I believe, January 26th. So that's tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're talking the eve before your album drops. You have the album launch. The album launch, I imagine, was good. It was a lot of fun. You got past the first hurdle, and now you got to go show this to the world.
Right.
I wish you nothing but the best of luck, man. I think this band really, really impressed me, not only sonically, but just the presentation of this band as a whole, like just the way you approach everything. Like I said, when we got on here, this band doesn't sound like they're taking things lightly. And seeing you guys live is definitely going to be on the list.
Please come.
I definitely will. And lastly, I just wanted to ask you, is there anybody that you're touring with, anybody that you know you're going to share a stage with, where you're like, oh, fuck, I can't believe we're playing with them?
Oh, yeah. I think we're playing the same day as Queens of the Stone Age at Shaky Knees.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, fuck, baby.
Have you seen Queens
That's
before?
Gonna be cool. No, never seen them.
I've seen Queens, I want to say, I'm not joking when I say maybe 40 times.
Holy shit.
And
so they're that good.
They're that good. And when you go watch them, if get as close as you can and watch the way everyone in that band plays their instruments, because it's like a masterclass, dude. You wouldn't think it by listening, but what they do together as a unit is next level. So enjoy that. And that's the perks again of being able to be a touring musician. You get to meet your heroes. You get to see people that you never thought you'd see play. And then one day you might have them in your phone.
That's cool.
And that's a crazy thing. So thanks for taking the time, man. Really appreciate it. And
thank you, Jason.
Hopefully we'll get to meet in person and enjoy that dog while you can, because you're going to be gone soon. You won't be able to.
That is true.
Bye, buddy. Thanks for taking the time.
Take it easy, man. Thank you. Yeah.
Take care.
Nice dude. Great singer. Mm-hmm. Kick-ass band. When I heard those choruses, especially off their new album, you could really tell that they are like, you could even see that he was excited about the way the album came together. And
tons
of rock autobiographies. And when the band is like, Johnny Ramone is like, you know, kind of like a grumpy guest, but when Too Tough to Die came out, even he was jazzed about it. He's like, oh, well, this is an album of good stuff.
Yeah.
And it feels very similar to what Jack was talking about. And I got to say, I agree with them. I'm excited for them. And they've been doing this for so long that I kind of like seeing when a band doesn't call it a day, because we live in a world where with instant gratification, you put out something and instantly you want to see views and clicks and likes and comments. Back in the day when we played anything or showed anything, we either had the imagination of somebody listening to the CD or tape or whatever, or we saw people reacting to the music live. But now people, including me, are obsessed with the results of stuff.
I know.
And it's kind of a bummer.
It's the only thing that drives them. It's like everything's results driven. It's like, how about just doing good work?
Yeah. But it also is kind of like if you did play a show and let's say only 10 people did show up.
Yeah.
And you would therefore not give them a good show because not enough people are there. That's kind of like saying, oh, well, I guess we shouldn't make podcasts anymore if every episode doesn't have like 20,000 views or whatever. It would be a real shame to phone in a podcast just because you don't think it will yield the results you want. Like, I think everything you do should be great.
Yeah.
And you know, when it takes off, it takes off. When it doesn't, it doesn't. But you're programmed to want to make amazing things. So I'd rather do that.
And I think it's sometimes it just shows someone's character. You know, like what are your real intentions? What are you in it for? And I think if you're in it for the right reasons, then it comes across and it's authentic and things find their audience eventually. You know, I do believe that. I really do. If you're consistent with something, you'll find your audience. So.
Yeah.
Well, it was really great to chat with that young gentleman named Jack from the band Dead Poets Society. And thank you, Ryan, for hanging out with me. We're going to call it a day because you and I are going to, we've got a lot of stuff coming up in the next few months.
Some
crazy guests. We've got some crazy podcast episodes that are coming. We've got some other adventures that are on the way and on the horizon. And I don't want to give away too much, but if you're enjoying the podcast, please like, subscribe, make sure you tell your friends about it. We appreciate all the feedback. Leave us comments and let us know who you'd like to see on the podcast. We're always open to that. I think we'll do a couple more lives too soon too, so we can have some like interaction, maybe base them around some cool things that are coming. But I think at this point, when this comes out, Dune might have already come out. You and I haven't seen.
So.
I don't think you and I have seen Dune yet. So when the next time we're on here talking about Dune, it should be interesting.
Yeah, we're recording this in the past. You know?
Yes, you are. So you might be hearing this a little bit later, but that's just what happens. So a big thanks to our friends over at Heartbeat Hot Sauce, the heartbeat of the Rockman Power Hour. You can check out their hot sauce at heartbeathotsauce.com. Use our promo code ROCKMAN20, and that'll get you 20% off your entire order. And you can use this as many times as you like. Thanks to my co-host, Ryan Stick. Thank you to our producer, Julia Kajerski. And thanks to all of you for joining us on the Rockman Power Hour. Until next week, take care, and we'll see you soon.